Hi, today we're very glad to have the opportunity to speak to Christina from Ukraine. And you are not only from Ukraine, but you are from the battlefield, actually, right? Where are you right now in the yeah.
Right now, I'm in Dnipropetrovsk Oblast, and I'm actually like 10 kilometers away from the front line right now. So it's actually kind of safe, but still, it's near the front line.
Wow, so 10 kilometers from the front line, and that's the Russian occupation zone.
Actually, like 2 days ago, I've been to Kramatorsk. It's like, I think, 30 kilometers away from Bakhmut, if I'm not mistaken. Now I'm 10 kilometers away from the front line, but it's kind of a gray zone, you know? So all over the east and south of Ukraine, you can find occupied zones and you can find gray zones, but unfortunately, lots of territories are still occupied.
I see. Because yesterday we attempted to talk, and it seems that the connection was bad because of the occupation or some situation that we don't really know, right?
Actually, Zoom and some other services count Donetsk Oblast as an occupied zone, though still only Donetsk itself and some parts of Donetsk Oblast, a big part, but still not the whole Donetsk Oblast, is occupied, luckily. And today I've been to the village in Donetsk Oblast, which was deoccupied, I think, like a week ago. There still were Russians in there. And today I had a lucky chance to be there as one of the first volunteers and one of the first civilians who were able to enter this village and to see the disaster that was left after the battles in there. Actually, I'm talking right now and the goosebumps are all over my body because today I've seen a village which is totally dead. Like, imagine yourself a place where is no, like, entire building that is not destroyed. Everything is destroyed. And I was told about from the militaries, they told me that unfortunately, those basements of those buildings are full of bodies of civilians who were trying to cover themselves during the war and during the battles. But Russians do not leave people alive. They do not care if you're a civilian or you're a volunteer or even you, if you're a medic, for example, medics is target number one. That's how it happens right now. And this war is unfortunately where it's off and very, very abnormal itself.
Yes, so because we before we chat, we know that you have founded an NGO, and that is offering voluntary military service to the front line. The concept is quite alien to us because most of the NGOs concern peacekeeping and humanitarian assistance, but you are doing the actual fighting, right?
Yeah, kind of. And we're trying to fight actually this idea that militaries do not need help. In Ukraine, the situation right now is that not only civilians, but also military really do need help. They need funds, they need humanitarian aid. Because unfortunately, our country cannot take so much money from outer world, you know, it's impossible to take more than we can give back. So, and we are getting enough. We are getting weapons. We're getting technology to fight Russians. But unfortunately, the like normal things, like sometimes even hygienic products, are not the militaries can buy them. Even though they have the salary, still they have their own families, which needs them as those people who can help in the financial situation, because also in Ukraine we have, of course, an economical crisis, a huge economical crisis right now. That is why their salaries seems to be high, even counting on Ukrainian average salary system, but still it's not enough. That is why a lot of volunteers in here in Ukraine are trying to raise donations and to help militaries. But when we contact the outer world, somewhere out of Ukraine, people think that we're kidding. Like, how can you help militaries? But still, We want to warn everybody that our army actually didn't want to fight. They had to because the enemy came to us. And actually, till 2014, we didn't even count Russia as an enemy. We were friends. And we still had diplomatic questions till 2022. But after 2022, we've realized that unfortunately it's an enemy. And that is why we need the help of the outer world because we cannot fight this disaster on our own.
So your NGO is assisting the official Ukrainian army, or you are recruiting your own military service?
Actually, I'm trying with my NGO. I'm receiving help and donations from around the world, from people who care, and especially in Ukraine. And then we buy goods and we buy the things that are needed to the army. And especially, I work with some groups, some units which I know personally. It's important for me because I need to know that these guys are like fighting on the front line. Where are they fighting? What are they doing? And then we can help to find money and sponsors and donors and like match them.
I see. So you're basically providing the match fund and utilities and facilities and everything for the army that cannot be provided by the government.
Yes, exactly. And my next step, I hope that I will raise as much donations as I can, not only to back guys with the thing that they need right now, but also for rehabilitation and rehabilitation programs, because a lot of militaries are injured. Some of them lost their limbs, some of them lost their even minds, and they all need rehabilitation. And unfortunately, our country can't afford help everybody. And it's also very important because those people didn't want to fight or kill, but they had to. Otherwise, their families won't be safe.
What's the division of labor between NGOs like yours and the government? Because government, I suppose they are paying the army and they are offering the basic necessities and everything. But you are doing some extra donation for the army. So do you have a kind of division of labor so that the soldiers can know where to seek for the right support?
Well, actually, government, as you said, provides their basic level of the needs. But for example, we do not have enough money in our country, for example, to donate for lots of drones, which are also needed to fight in this war, because, for example, Russians have the whole army of drones, and we don't. And that's a really bad situation because we need more and more to help. And so we are trying to buy and cover those needs, which cannot be covered by the government, though the government tries to help. My NGO, for example, finds enough money to buy a big drone, like the whole system of drones, I can go to the government and say, I have money, please buy those guys, this or that. So it depends on the situation and it depends on which finances we have.
So, the government, in your opinion, is it providing sufficient support for the army, or do you see some kind of loopholes that require particular external attention?
I don't want to criticize anyone. That is why, let me say that it's like basic level of support, which of course I want to be bigger, but not for now. Not for now. Because the problem is that war is not only for a year and a half right now. Yeah. The war have started actually 2014. And it's a bad and really big question. Why we still do not have enough financial support and enough supplies for the army, but stuff happens, and that is why I don't want to think about right now why it's happened. I want just to cover all the needs right now, and then of course to ask why I have to cover all that and ask people for donations and money.
You've mentioned that some of the soldiers, they, of course, nobody would like to fight, right? But let's put it this way: how's the morale of the Ukrainian army? And in comparison with the Russian army, do you think there are substantial differences that can be observed?
For example, if still the situation is if Russian soldiers are caught by Ukrainian army, they sometimes don't even want to go to Russia back because we provide them with accommodations. Though it's a jail, still they have accommodations, they have food, they have opportunity to call their parents or anyone, their relatives. And if Ukrainian soldier is caught by Russians, we start to be nervous. For example, a friend of mine was caught by Russians for like almost 4 days ago, and we are still waiting from the news for the news from him. And we're not sure that he's gonna come alive, and that he's gonna be alive when we try to exchange the soldiers, you know. And the attitude, actually, I've been volunteering since 26th of February 2022. So I've been to different territories. Actually, the territories that were just liberated, and I was trying to be one of the first who came there to help people with humanitarian aid, to help civilians also. And the stories that I was told by the ordinary people, how the Russians act, still the goosebumps, because like it's not a joke about raped kids. It's not a joke about killing just people that were just passing on the streets on the occupied territory. And for example, one Russian soldier didn't like how the personality looked at him, and he just shot this person just because. And it's a real situation, so it's not just like imaginary world, you know. And Ukrainian army is still stands on their position that we are not killers. We are not. We do not want to act like criminal element. We are protecting our country, and though we need to kill to protect our country, actually, I didn't meet. I swear, I didn't meet anyone, any Ukrainian soldier who said to me like, "Oh, I love to kill." All of them say like, "I want to stop this war and just go home." Because we are fed up. We really want a normal life.
You started volunteering in 2022 when the war began, and previously, had you ever involved in similar services?
Yes, I've been working. Had an NGO before. I've been working in with local government in Kharkiv while I lived there for a long time. I worked in youth politics before. I've also was keen on charity. I was keen on charitable funds, you know, trying to help here and there. So I was quite active before. And when the war started, I've been working in marketing, and I wanted to make my own business. But war came, and I had to decide what to do next. I wanted to join army, but it didn't happen. No one wanted a girl, a young girl, to go somewhere on the battlefield. Everyone was like, no, you're not going to the army. So I started to volunteer, and it was quite familiar to me. What I'm doing now is like relative to the thing that I've been doing before.
Which means if there's no war, you were aspiring to be a politician in Ukraine. Kind of.
Maybe someday. Yeah, not a politician. I just wanted to do something for my country and change the situation, because still we even before war, we had a lot of, you know, USSR set of minds, and it's worked very bad to our country, and I wanted to change something. But then the war came, and all those changes are going faster, but still there are people with this USSR mindset with what we are trying to fight inside the country. Not fight, I mean, like fight, but we're working on that.
I've been to Ukraine a few years ago, just to the major big cities and the West and Lviv and so forth. But I've never had the experience to go to the East. So from the news report, it seems that the eastern side right now has been completely devastated. And what's the native situation over there?
On the east side, well, actually, it's kind of looks kind of disaster because lots of villages and cities are destroyed. Some of them are occupied, but still, people in here are amazing. You know, I used to live in Kharkiv for a long time, but I have never been to Donetsk region, for example, or even Zaporizhzhia Oblast, Zaporizhzhia region. I have never been here before the war, and now I see how amazing people are in here, and they still have this soul, you know, and mindset to win the war. But at the same time, here it feels like real war, you know. So when I come back to Kyiv, for example, where I used to live before the war, I do not feel war in there, luckily. So people are more relaxed, you know, and on the east, it's kind of different.
And when we are reading the news about the forthcoming counterattack, every possibility on the front line, what's in your mind? I mean, there must be a solution somewhere. So if the Russians say, let's get to talk, and if the Ukrainian government is willing to give up some lands, then we are willing to give peace to you. So do you think these kind of proposals would ever be accepted by the Ukrainians?
No, people are not ready for that, unfortunately. They've done so much. They've done so much to us already that we are not ready to give them even a smallest piece of land. Though we are suffering so much, but we believe in victory and we believe that we can leave our territories back, which were in 1991. Why? Not because we are stubborn, but because we are worried that once we give the step back, you know, and give what they want. The next, they already had war with Armenia. They already had war with Georgia. What's next? What do they do next? And if Ukraine gives up, it means that Russia can do anything to other countries. What's next? Europe? No, we are protecting. We think that we are now protecting not only European region, which is trying to show that. Any country which has bad intentions won't set up those intentions as they just like it. No way. It's time to live in peace in the whole world. Though we need to fight for peace, okay, we're gonna fight for peace, but we're gonna establish peace as it might be, not just like the aggressor thinks it's his will. And of course, still looking at the situation in 2014 with the Crimea, for example, which was taken, it was obviously not nothing was like in law in that situation. You know, it was just a piece of land that was taken from the other country, and that's it. So no, no peaceful decisions. If they just leave us alone, okay, it's gonna be a peaceful decision.
So, which means you expect the Ukrainian army to recover all the lost territories, including Crimea.
Yes, we want that, but we do not want, you know, the worst thing in all this that taking our territories back means that we will have a battle in there, so we will damage and destroy something, we will frighten people. We will do a disaster all over those territories. And that is why we don't want to do that. So we just want to convince Russia, just go away, okay? And leave those people alone. We will deal with those territories. We will renovate them. We will do everything. But just leave us alone because, on the one hand, we want the territories back. On the other hand, to imagine how many suffering it can bring. It's like, you know, it's an awful situation.
Which
So
means
I hope that somehow, maybe all other countries can convince Russia to just leave us alone and give us the territories back. I hope so, but still, I want to believe in that.
you just mentioned the other countries, and a while ago, the Chinese government has sent a special, it's not an ambassador, but representative of chairman to mediate the war. And how do the Ukrainians think about this? Do you think the Chinese can be an honest broker?
Oh, I think that China, and not only me, like a lot of people in here think that China is doing their own business, you know? Well, it's more they're just doing their own business. They're just making like profits and that's it. And I hope that they won't give this help hand to Russia as a partners, because otherwise it means that the Third World War is already started. As for me, I'm not fond of their politics, and I hope they're just businessmen, you know, just businessmen. But still, it's awful when you feel that there is like a big country with a big economy can affect your small country with such bad economy as it is right now.
So let's talk about your NGOs again. When you are appealing for donation and funding, usually how would you speak to the potential donors? Like, say this is the a video. I think some of the audience or most of the audience will be Cantonese speaking people from Hong Kong or those ethnic Chinese over the world. Then how would you appeal to them?
Well, usually I just say honestly everything that I feel and I see, because as I realized during the war that being honest is the most precious thing, you know, because I don't want to lie to people and say, for example, okay, donate me money for civilians and then I buy something for the military. If someone finds out later, it can cause big problems. That is why I'm just presenting myself and say, okay, I'm really on the front line, really see the needs, and here on the front line, I help militaries, and at the same time, I'm trying to understand what's the needs of the civilians who live in the gray zones, and I can help you to find those people who you want to donate to. And help them to receive your aid and receive your love and receive your attitudes, good attitudes, because it's impossible to divide strictly, you know, like I'm only with the military, or I want only with civilians. For me, it's like every person matters. I'm focused on military help, but still, I'm happy to help civilians, those villagers who are not, like today I've been to those villages that were destroyed. And for example, Neskuchna, it is destroyed totally. There is no one in there. But while you're approaching this village, you can see in other villages, and there is one house where the whole family lives. So we stopped there with humanitarian aid. Gave them humanitarian aid, and they showed their garden. Right now, they're growing. They're growing melons, they're growing onions, they're growing right now during the war. So, like, you know, rockets coming here and there, and they are still working on the with their garden. That's fantastic. So I want to help those people also to survive. Why not? And a lot of people all around the world, maybe also they want to join.
I see. I see. Because when you talk about an NGO and that is helping the military, have you faced any reluctance from the potential donors? Because most people are used to the concept that okay, now we're giving people money for humanitarian support, but I think the concept, as mentioned before, to support the military is a little bit remote from most people's mindset. So have you faced similar difficulties when you are trying to appeal to those people?
Yes. In I think 90% of cases, when I talk to funds in Europe, for example, all around the world, they usually say that oh, we are sorry, but we can help only civilians. And when I say like, but we need that because our army is gonna win this war. Military is the only people who can win this war. I do care about civilians. I do care about animals. I do care about everything. But still, at the same time, militaries need help because they are gonna win this war. And a lot of European funds, a lot of like international funds, they don't want to help. They don't want to help, and that is why I'm searching like different and sometimes even creative ways to get more funds.
I think another rationale from the potential donor is probably how to make sure that the money goes to the right place, as that's the usual question when people are donating money. So NGO has been registered with the Ukrainian government, and I think there's a website that we can look around when you are having updates, etc. Can you tell us a little bit more about
Usually I use Instagram because actually I had no time to establish a website, but and still, like not many people right now who want to, spend their time on the website. So we usually use social media. I have my private social media where people can see where I am, what I'm doing, and also the Instagram of the organization, where usually post everything that we have, we got the donations, where it went. And also, of course, with donors with whom I work, I also send the videos and photo proofs that their help have reached the audience. And of course, if, for example, the funds wants to see, like, we've donated some money, please open your bank account list and show us what you've bought for this and that money. Of course, I do that. And sometimes I even do that on social media that I've bought here, did this on this amount of money. And here are the people who got it. So everything is transparent because transparency is the main thing in charity and in NGO work.
I see. We'll definitely show the link and the IG accounts for like-minded people who are interested so that they can learn about the latest situation. But my final
Thanks.
question is that when you are being so transparent, then do you worry about the other things like the Russians can target you when you are being so outspoken and public and so forth? So have you ever worried about your own personal security?
Well, to tell the truth, at the very beginning of war, when I of this war of full-scale invasion, I was warned by militaries that one day it might happen that you're gonna be a target. And I said, okay, but you're also a target, so we are equal right now. And that is why I know, of course, that all social medias are open, and of course that's still we know the information that Russians are targeting us, and they see what the volunteers doing, they know where we are. That is why we need to protect us ourselves with some kind of technological security. But that's just the bad side of my work, and I need to do it. No matter what. Otherwise, if I do not reach people like this, and if I'm not open and transparent, people won't believe me. And I want them to understand that everything's fine, you can trust me. And if something happens to me, that's not just a coincidence, it's Russians. So that's just business.
But you're talking about sharing the exact locations of your work and where have you been and so forth, and that could be easy targets from the Russian side.
Well, that is why there are some tricks, I try. I never post on the same location where I'm standing right now. Always, everything's blocked, locked, and then when I know that I'm in safe place, for example, I can post something. But still, my geolocation on the telephone and computers is always blocked. Because I don't want to share this information. And of course, there is a problem that even when you're taking some pictures, all the pictures can contain the information. That is why we are already used to like take away the metadata from the photos, for example. Never sharing the photos like at the same day, like and lots of stuff that you need to keep in your mind. But that's war. Unfortunately, that's like abnormal war. It's not the Second World War, right? When the world was easier because because there was no internet. Now it's less safe, but at the same time you can work on it. And especially I was keen on this all these ideas in the very beginning of my volunteering. That is why now I have at least an information how to protect myself and also people I help from being targets.
I see. I see. My final question, Christina. You are from the front line and you study all the relevant stuffs like global politics, I suppose. So you know a lot about the Ukrainian government, of course, obviously. So is it possible to give us a realistic estimation that when would you expect the war to be ended?
That's the hardest question ever, because when the war started, we expected that we're gonna win in two months, but it was unrealistic, of course. And still, some say that it's gonna end in 3 more years, like the 5 years in total. I believe that, yeah, not more than that. But it depends what to call the war. The full-scale war was at the beginning, like from the 24th of February 2022. Now it's like moving, to the some kind of positions on the south and east. So maybe it will happen that like in 2014 till 2022, we'll have war, but only in the part of our country. And it won't affect that much the rest of the country. But the war itself also, like the end of the war, contained the trickiest question that all Ukrainians are thinking right now. What's the end of the war? Is it just peace that we gain? Or with any kind of decisions of the government, or is it like bringing back the whole territory of 1991? And as for me, like the whole territories of 1991, plus maybe a part of Russia, if they want to join us after the war, they are welcome, but being a part of Ukraine. So this is the end of the war for me. And we expect that this is going to happen in 2 or 3 years from this date.
Wow, it's still a long time.
Yes, unfortunately. But see, we're saying positive, but we are very tired. To tell the truth, there is no one who is connected with war. Everybody say the same. We are tired, but we need to end this disaster. That's it. So we're gonna fight till the end, but bringing peace to us and so all of the rest world. We want to show that war is disgusting. Disgusting, and I hope no one decides to like establish new war somewhere in the world. Please, no.
Thank you so much, Christina. I do hope that we have the opportunity to meet you in Ukraine sometime someday when it's totally free and liberated.
Please come to visit us. I will do everything for you to feel safe and to be treated as we love to treat people in here who come to us with all the hostility that we have and all the love and respect.
Thanks so much, and all the best, and be safe.
See ya.
See you. Ciao.
Ciao.